Welcome to the first A-Level Politics Show episode of 2023. We are now up to episode 103. Many of these pods, like this one, are free, but to get full access to the complete back catalogue, all 103 pods of goodness, plus two bonus pods each month going forward, why not subscribe to Plus Plus Plus? With your mocks fast approaching and beyond that your final exams, there is no better time to subscribe. I do understand that there is a cost of living crisis at the moment, which is why the subscription price is just £1.99 and you can cancel at any time. Plus, I'll always give one pod away free each month like this one. I've always got your back. And with that in mind, on with the show. Today's episode is all about UK sovereignty. The question is this: evaluate the view that now the UK has left the EU, Parliament has become sovereign once again. Now, there are a few things to consider here. You should show knowledge of how the UK got to where it did with Brexit, and you have to show knowledge of the continuing challenges the UK faces with its relationship with the EU, especially the issues concerning Northern Ireland. More on that throughout the podcast. You also need to acknowledge that regardless of the UK's EU membership, Parliament's sovereignty is forever in conflict with other centres of power, including that of the executive, the devolved bodies, and we the people, who like to have our say over who gets to wield power, who gets to wield sovereignty. Let's start at the beginning, though, with the definition of what sovereignty is. In a nutshell, sovereignty refers to where power resides or lives, or where decisions are taken. But we know that life is more complicated than that. The debate regarding sovereignty is between where decisions are formally taken and between who or what actually influences those decisions. Brexit, in many ways, has not changed this debate. It has merely provided us with more examples. So, to answer a question on parliamentary sovereignty, it is important to consider conflicting claims of where sovereignty lies. It is perhaps safe to argue that the UK has multiple sovereignties in conflict with each other, and that Brexit has not changed this. So we have legal sovereignty. This is the idea that power lies where laws are made. In the UK, Parliament is seen to have legal sovereignty, and more of it since Brexit. But this is in conflict with political sovereignty, regardless of whether Brexit happened or not. Now, political sovereignty is the body, institution, or group that in practice holds the most influence over decision making. In the UK, the governing party, the cabinet, and the prime minister are often thought of as having political sovereignty, in part due to their dominance over parliament. But we must not discount the two other forms of sovereignty that I shall be evaluating today, and that is popular sovereignty. Popular sovereignty rests with the electorate, which votes in referendums and elections, the outcome of which are in practice binding on Parliament, if not legally so. And then devolved sovereignty. And Parliament has agreed for other bodies or institutions to take decisions. And these devolved powers can be taken back by the UK Parliament at a later date, but in practice are rarely so done. So, on now to this debate. Now, the decision to leave the EU has heightened the debate about where sovereignty lies in the UK and whether Parliament in particular has won back its legal sovereignty. So in the first section of this podcast, we will really look at Brexit and whether parliamentary sovereignty, legal sovereignty, has been restored. Brexit has arguably meant that the UK Parliament once again enjoys full legal sovereignty. Prior to Brexit, it was accepted in the Factotum case that EU had primacy over UK law. Now, the Factotum case was a ruling by the former Law Lords, the precursor to the UK Supreme Court, which asserted that EU law on fishing rights took priority over a UK law that banned foreign vessels in UK waters. The UK Parliament, it said, could not introduce a law that conflicted with EU law, yet now it can. The very fact that the UK chose, through parliamentary law, to leave the EU demonstrates perhaps that it was sovereign all along. The Supreme Court ruled in the 2017 Miller case that parliamentary sovereignty was superior to the executive's royal prerogative powers and insisted that the Brexit could be confirmed through parliamentary statute alone. The EU Withdrawal Act 2020 and the EU Future Relationship Act 2020 both paved the way for Britain to leave the EU and set out the UK's trading relationship with the EU going forward. Both were laws passed by Parliament. And then, arguably, you could say that Brexit is just the starting gun when it comes to the UK's reassertion of legal sovereignty resting in Parliament. Some government ministers have called for the UK to go further and leave the European Convention on Human Rights, the guardian of which is the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg, which is a non-EU body but has jurisdiction in the UK. Some therefore see Brexit as a beginning of a trend where the farming out of sovereignty to various international institutions is reversed and legal sovereignty is returned to Westminster. Ignoring ECHR court rulings on prisoner voting can be seen in this context. However, many of the powers returning to the UK will not be subject to parliamentary or have not been subject to parliamentary jurisdiction, but instead have been wielded by government ministers themselves in the form of secondary legislation, or what is sometimes referred to as statutory instruments, or SIs. Now, this secondary legislation, or SIs, often amounts to small changes in the law that do not require the same legislative hurdles as ordinary primary legislation, and is wielded, that they are wielded or altered by ministers in the executive branch in government departments. In relation to Brexit, they have collectively referred to SIs as Henry VIII powers, since they seem to give the government authority over large swathes of policy without parliamentary consent. Well over 600 SIs were made to give effect to Brexit, according to the UCL's Constitution Unit, and around 500 in relation to the COVID pandemic. Ministers argue that these two events are one-off and exceptional, and that normal parliamentary scrutiny will resume. But the laying down of SIs through secondary legislation has few restrictions and can apply to pretty much any area of policy, so long as primary legislation passing through Parliament give ministers that flexibility. Brexit was supposed to mean that the UK Parliament dictated the country's trading relationship. However, the UK signed up to the Northern Ireland Protocol, which effectively meant that Northern Ireland would stay in the EU single market and follow EU rules and European Court of Justice ECJ rulings. This was in order to avoid customs checks and a so-called hard border between the Republic of Ireland, a country that is in the EU, and Northern Ireland, which is part of the UK. Thus, the UK Parliament is not able to prevent one part of the UK from having to stick to EU rules and follow decisions handed down by the European Court of Justice. So can we say that Parliament is fully legally sovereign? Perhaps not. And if we go further and we look at the UK's other obligations under international law, we see that the UK has signed international treaties, conventions, and belongs to organisations like NATO and the UN, which are well beyond the scope of the EU and which still affect parliamentary sovereignty. Despite criticisms from right-wing politicians over Britain's signing up to the European Convention of Human Rights or remaining in it, the UK still remains in it. It is still a signatory of that piece of international law. And the majority of politicians in Westminster remain committed to that continuing, which means that the European Court of Human Rights still has jurisdiction over certain parts of human rights law and can apply them to the UK. So Parliament is not, therefore, completely legally sovereign. It may be more legally sovereign than it was post-Brexit, but a lot of those powers have come back to government departments and ministers through SIs, and Britain has still signed up to various other treaties and conventions which still compel the country, in a legal sense, to follow things that maybe Parliament would not have wanted. Let's turn to political sovereignty. Now, a reminder of what that is. It's where power actually lies. It's those who influence decision making. Now, we can say that Parliament is legally sovereign because everything has to go through it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that Parliament has the final say on shaping legislation. That, people argue, often comes from the governing party, from the cabinet, from prime ministers, from government departments. But we can make the case, perhaps, that increasingly Parliament is asserting itself and therefore influencing decisions more, and that Brexit actually created that process. Political sovereignty is not fixed and it is restricted by parliamentary assertion. A party with a thin or non-existent majority will find it much more difficult to control the parliamentary agenda. In the spring and autumn of 2019, Parliament voted to take over the agenda of Parliament from the government using Standing Order 24. Now, Standing Order 24 is a rule of the House of Commons that allows an MP to request an emergency debate on a particular topic. The Speaker can decide whether to accept or reject the request. Most of the time, the Speaker refuses the request, but is more likely to be swayed if the government lacks majority, as the government did between 2017 and 2019. So, Standing Order 24 was approved by then Speaker John Bercow, wrestling the parliamentary agenda away from the government and allowing Parliament to initiate its own votes on Brexit, even though the government didn't want it to. And so the use of SO24 led to the passing of the Benn Act, which compelled the Prime Minister to request a delay to Brexit should a deal with the EU not be reached or voted on by Parliament. We can see, therefore, that Parliament was influencing when Brexit actually happened. And also, let's consider the events of 2022, when backbench MPs in the governing party have effectively sacked two prime ministers through rebellions and votes of no confidence, which, while the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, actually survived, really mortally wounded him. Parliament, after a docile start after the 2019 general election when the government won a huge majority, has arguably reasserted itself. A culture of rebellion against government bills has become the norm. And I think that Brexit and the debates around it really created that norm. Fearing defeat, the government has U-turned on a number of policies not really related to Brexit, including on raising national insurance, fracking, and on, well, pretty much the entirety of Liz Truss's budget. However, we shouldn't go too far. Political sovereignty, in reality, and for most of the time, rests with the governing party, the cabinet and the prime minister. The fusion of powers allows the government to sit in parliament and control the agenda, to dominate it. A government with a huge majority will never see control of this agenda to MPs in parliament in a formal sense. Since 2019, the government has not lost a single vote in the House of Commons. The government handles day-to-day decision-making. With a wave of strikes affecting vital public services at the time of recording, the Sunak government is dictating the response, not Parliament itself. And at the time of recording, this has entailed a refusal to reach deals with nurses, ambulance drivers, train drivers and the like. So we can see that it is the government, it is the executive, it is the Prime Minister that is deciding what the decision should be when it comes to public sector pay, not necessarily Parliament shaping the response to the strikes and the industrial unrest that have unfolded. So I think we can see actually that post-Brexit, we still have a situation, especially in a majority government, where it's not just Parliament that has actual power. It's not just Parliament that affects the day-to-day decision-making. The executive plays a role here. The Prime Minister plays a role, even if they are weakened. I'm going to briefly talk about popular sovereignty. So this is the idea that the people put the politicians in the House of Commons, and therefore parliamentary sovereignty is really an expression of our popular sovereignty, our popular will. However, if the popular will is divided, as it was by the EU referendum when it was a very close result, and also by the 2017 general election, also a close result, with no government majority, the net effect is to empower ordinary MPs in Westminster, in Parliament, who hold more power in a hung Parliament, thus allowing Parliament to take control of decision making. And therefore, we can say that Parliament is exerting sovereignty over perhaps popular sovereignty. However, there's no doubt that popular sovereignty has challenged parliamentary sovereignty, and that was taking place well before Brexit. But certainly post-Brexit, we can see, or post the EU referendum, we can see that the outcome of that referendum was essentially an instruction, and certainly MPs, a lot of MPs saw it as that. It was an instruction to Parliament by the people to deliver on Brexit. Everything that followed in Parliament served to carry out the so-called will of the British people. We will also have a general election coming up fairly soon, probably in the next 18 months, where the people can decide if they like the government that has been so associated with Brexit and whether they want to throw them out. If the post-Brexit benefits don't seem to have materialised in the general populace, in the voting public, then maybe we get a result where the Conservative government is thrown out of office. So we can see actually that sovereignty can arguably lie with the people who decide whether they want the government to be in charge. And that has existed before Brexit and it will exist post-Brexit. I'm now going to come on to devolution. So we're going to deal with devolution as our last area of debate. Despite devolution, you could argue, Parliament retains reserve powers and still takes the major decisions affecting the nation. There is also the so-called Sewell Convention, the expectation that the UK Parliament would not normally legislate in areas that are considered to be part of the jurisdiction of the devolved bodies. Yet this Sewell Convention is not legally binding, and so the devolved bodies can be ignored by Parliament. The Supreme Court ruled in 2017 that the devolved bodies could not reject what Parliament passes or passed in relation to Brexit. Indeed, the Supreme Court has recently gone further in confirming parliamentary sovereignty, denying the Scottish Parliament the right in 2022 to trigger a second independence referendum without first having it approved by the UK Parliament. Bolstered by this case, the UK government is likely to use the courts again to challenge Scotland's recent approval of the Gender Recognition Bill, citing parliamentary legislation, in this case the Equalities Act, to claim that parliamentary law supersedes devolved law. At the time of recording, it is looking at invoking Section 35 of the Scotland Act, which entitles the government to deny royal assent for a Scottish law if it believes it would have an adverse effect on the operation of reserved matters. So stay tuned for the mother of all legal battles on that. But in effect, parliamentary sovereignty has been effectively devolved to newly created institutions such as the Scottish Parliament and the Welsh Senedd. The Sewell Convention that I just mentioned implies that the devolved bodies should be asked for their consent to laws passed by Parliament that are considered to be under the jurisdiction of the devolved administrations. The Scottish Parliament passed the Gender Recognition Act in 2022, which smooths the process for transgender people to apply for legal recognition of a change in sex, in part because gender recognition is a devolved matter. So we can see, therefore, that even if the government wins its case against the Gender Recognition Bill, that doesn't necessarily mean that the Scottish Parliament won't then legislate in other areas on transgender rights. It already has declared violence against transgender people can be declared a hate crime and was the first in the world to do so well before the UK Parliament. And it can go into other areas as well, on education and so on. And it's unlikely in the short term that any of these devolved powers will come back to Westminster. In fact, if there is a Labour government, it's likely that we will see more devolution, especially in England. And so we can see actually increasingly the trend is for Parliament to give up its powers, to lend out its powers to devolved bodies. And arguably this would have happened with or without Brexit. I think there's greater tension between the devolved bodies and the UK government as a result of Brexit, because Scotland largely voted to remain. But sovereignty post-Brexit is really the same as sovereignty pre-Brexit, in the sense that devolved powers are really semi-entrenched and unlikely to be changed. And therefore, we can say that regardless of Brexit, Parliament is losing power to devolution. Therefore, it is perhaps safe to say that while some powers have returned to the UK post-Brexit, power, and by extension sovereignty, be it legal or otherwise, rests in many places. The executive dominates Parliament to a greater or lesser degree, depending on the size of the majority and the popularity of political leaders. Thus, political sovereignty will always impinge upon parliamentary sovereignty to a greater or lesser extent as well. We, the people, choose our politicians. It is highly likely, with the absence of clear Brexit benefits the UK may seek in the future with a new government, a closer relationship with the EU in future years, leading to the UK once again accepting perhaps single market rules and thus rulings from the European Court of Justice governing those single market rules. Admittedly, the future is not ours to see, but Parliament, specifically the House of Commons, doesn't just magically appear. Its members are put there by us and are often given pretty clear instructions, especially when the government wins a mandate to govern with a large majority. The devolved bodies are not going away and in all likelihood will appear in greater number with greater bolshiness, as we might say, especially if there is a change in government where maybe the devolved bodies will seek even greater power and win that power, and maybe new bodies will be formed. Thus, it is perhaps best to consider that parliamentary sovereignty is constantly in conflict and being challenged by other forms of sovereignty. Brexit has not changed that. Maybe there's some more legal sovereignty that the UK Parliament has won, but as I mentioned earlier, in effect, a lot of the powers coming back from Brussels went to government ministers, and those other forms of sovereignty that I spoke about aren't going away. Thus, we have multiple sovereignties. I hope you found this podcast useful. If you did, again, like I said at the start of the podcast, think about subscribing, and the deets on how to do that are in the show notes. Until the next time, take care, peeps. Bye-bye.